with the production of natural gas on their land. ThinkAboutIt.org.
For many, a charitable bequest is a unique expression of appreciation. The thoughtfulness of many individual families, like the Levinsons and Fines, has led to planned gifts which help WLRN sustain and grow. Through your will or estate plan, you can name Friends of WLRN as the beneficiary of your estate or a portion of it, providing an enduring legacy of public media for years to come. To learn more about making an impact through planned gifts, call 305-350-7977.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents Monday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. How was your weekend?
Great. And yours?
Very well. Very good. Some good football games on.
Good tennis.
Yeah. Well, this hour we visit with National Lawyers Guild Executive Director Heidi Boghossian. We'll discuss her book, Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. Today's surveillance isn't confined to government security, as we all know, but is exercised by the private sector as well. Welcome to you, Heidi Boghossian. Nice to have you on.
It's wonderful to be on. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us. I think most of us are now aware of the government agencies that use surveillance, but they're still accountable to the Constitution. You talk a lot about the private corporations contracted by the government that don't need to abide by the Constitution and are only accountable to their shareholders. Tell us about these companies and how this is working.
I think it's useful to go back a couple of decades. Really, when the Cold War ended, we saw a decline in military spending in the United States. And at the end of the 90s, certain companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, started really to see a slight upsurge in spending as a lot of military applications were, in effect, repurposed for civilian use. Then we had 9/11 and the horrible events of that day, which really then saw a lot of money being poured into military spending. And what we've learned is that in addition to weapons, we have things like biometric identification systems, drones, other things that we're increasingly seeing making their way into the U.S. daily lives and being used to monitor our activities, not only from retail transactions or surveillance cameras on the street, but as listeners know, monitoring our transactions online, our communications, our social networking communications. And with the Snowden revelations, I think people are slowly coming to be aware of how much corporations really conduct our surveillance, but also have control over our personal information.
Over the weekend, I was watching a movie on the computer, a documentary, and it involved Air Force One, and I was thinking, I'd like to see the interior of Air Force One. So I went to a search engine, put in Air Force One, and then I hesitated a minute, thinking, does somebody think I'm casing Air Force One? and I'm going right. into some database or something.
Right.
It makes you think twice before you just go anywhere on the Internet.
And I think actually that gets to the heart of why all of this surveillance is problematic. It has what we call a chilling effect on our free speech. When you know that you're being monitored potentially in everything that you do, even in the privacy of your own home when you make a search on the computer. And people know that because if you purchase something, for example, a pair of shoes, notice how many pop-up advertisements come when you're doing other work for shoes. So that data aggregators are collecting, amassing that information on us, creating electronic dossiers, and then sending ads right back to us. But certainly, when you know that you go to a protest, for example, and there are a lot of police in riot gear with less lethal weapons, as has happened in the last decade or two, increasingly, it makes people be afraid to go meet in public, to go to the very parks and streets that are designated as places of assembly under the Constitution. And I think that now, with sophisticated data analytics, people are becoming aware that if you put certain search words in, you may conceivably attract the attention of the government. And that cramps our style. That chills how we communicate with one another and how we associate.
You say that all this personal information is being stored and can be used and accessed down the road for purposes other than for what it was intended. Like what kind of purposes?
Well, a lot of those purposes we can't know, and that in and of itself is a rather frightening prospect. But a few examples might be, and especially if in the hands of the wrong people, and that could be private contractors who don't have, as you referenced earlier, sort of a, they've not taken an oath to uphold the Constitution the way government personnel have, or our leadership. Say your hospital information, your health records are stored, and a data aggregator has certain information about that. Certainly, if, say, a health insurance company wanted to look around and find out if you have a history of certain illnesses, or through metadata, which would enable not contents of messages to be analyzed, but certainly if you visited a cancer clinic, for example, or if you had an abortion, or saw a psychiatrist, or were on a certain kind of medication. If businesses who profit from, say, providing health insurance or related services were to gather that information and decide that they did not want to grant health insurance or something like that, a service that if they didn't know it, they might provide you, that becomes a way in which individuals can be discriminated against, targeted for not only their health condition, but say their political viewpoint. And that's something that's of a special concern because individuals who criticize the government or corporate policies that may be harmful to certain people seem to be the ones that get silenced first. And we know that not only does the government get information from data aggregators, businesses also have their own intelligence divisions that have monitored and even infiltrated individuals who have spoken out against their particular policies. I mean, Hewlett-Packard, HP, years ago, hired private security companies who engaged in the practice of pretexting. They pretended to be members of the press and got personal information on them in an effort to find out who leaked stories. So I think there are any number of things that can be done that we may not anticipate that could be harmful to us in the future.
Touch on the term overcollection of data and how it dilutes meaningful intelligence goals. I guess it's like a needle in a haystack.
Yes, and I think that what's happening is there seems to be a race, literally, to amass as much data as is humanly possible. And in order to accommodate this electronic data, be it from telecommunications companies to other, you know, databases that have stored information on all of us from various transactions, we're building a new data center in Utah with huge computers that can process really amounts of information that are difficult to even conceive of. The scope is so big. And what has been said by many commentators is that when you have so much information, it becomes difficult to effectively and quickly search through it to find credible threats to security in this country. And so maybe we're better in a way going back to sort of old-fashioned law enforcement where you really follow leads based on probable cause that criminal action may be afoot. Right now we're skirting those protections that have been put in place by our judicial system so that we're learning that even the FISA court, the secret FISA court, and other ways that the government is collecting information have been done with sort of secret interpretations of these laws, and that even the laws themselves, the Patriot Act, Section 215, and other provisions that allow government to gather information that they couldn't do before 9/11 without a judicial warrant. We're even hearing that the Drug Enforcement Administration under Project Hemisphere is paying AT&T staff members to sit next to them to go through records of Americans based not on a judicial warrant, but on administrative subpoenas, just a piece of paper saying they want to look into someone. And those records date back 26 years. So I think when there's so much information, you have to wonder, are we safer? And I would say that because of the difficulty, we had 9/11, we had the Boston bombing incident where there had been intelligence gathered related to both of those, but we didn't prevent them. And we've been very fortunate, I think, that there have been no other serious attacks. But it raises concerns that, especially when we spy on allied nations and when we spy on the media or Al Jazeera, we're making more enemies. And how much safer are we in that atmosphere?
We're speaking with Heidi Boghossian. She's the executive director of the National Lawyers Guild and co-host of the Civil Liberties radio show, Law and Disorder. And her book is entitled Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. We're going to take a short break on today's Topical Currents, and we'll be right back.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. We're funded by listeners like you and by Halsey and Griffith Office Solutions, South Florida's RICO dealer, offering copiers, printers, scanners, service, and software solutions, serving businesses since 1921. More information at 305-623-1921 and halsey-griffith.com.
For three straight years, the Florida economy has added jobs each and every month, but hundreds of thousands remain out of work, some for several years. I'm Tom Hudson. Join us tonight at 7 for the Sunshine Economy, finding work in South Florida. What are job seekers finding when searching for work? Tonight at 7, the Sunshine Economy on WLRN.
Hello, my name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book.
The Book of Mormon, winner of 9 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, comes to the Broward Center. From the creators of South Park, The Book of Mormon begins November 26th at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. Tickets on sale 10 a.m. on September 9th. Details at browardcenter.org for information and tickets. The Book of Mormon.
Elder Green, I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Heidi Boghossian. We're talking about her book, Spying on Democracy. Heidi, I was thinking this morning, or wondering this morning, could the Watergate investigative reporting have survived today's surveillance techniques?
Are you saying could it have gone undetected?
Right. Or as deeply as it did.
Right. Certainly, I think the parallels between what happened under the counterintelligence programs of J. Edgar Hoover's FBI and under the Nixon administration and other presidential administrations. You know, we've always had spying on, domestic spying on dissidents and individuals who were perceived to be outspoken. Civil rights leaders, even the National Lawyers Guild, the organization for which I work, was monitored by the FBI for 3 decades. Our phones were tapped. We had an agent in one of our offices. So I think that this is not a new dynamic, but definitely the advent of sophisticated technology and personal computers and really electronic sophisticated devices has transformed the way spying can take place. And it becomes very difficult after we're accustomed to relying on expediency through these personal devices to think of what it might be like to go back. We had the same problems then that we do now. Basically, when a president overreaches his or her power, when the administration makes enemies of individuals in the country, often based on political or religious viewpoints, you find an abuse of power. And that's, I think, the real danger that people are concerned about is technology has the capacity and has transformed our lives in the last couple of decades so dramatically. The internet was formed to allow the sharing of intellectual ideas and information, and is such a wonderful new invention. But the problem is that that technology, of course, can be used for more insidious purposes. And as we're finding with recent revelations about how the U.S. government has actually cracked much of the encryption devices and protections that have been in place for banking systems and medical records and internet and email correspondence, we see that under the guise of protecting national security, but I think also maintaining its status as a world superpower, the USA and the NSA are working so closely with corporations to either build backdoor entrance into this equipment so that they can spy, or possibly in doing so, making us, as I said, less secure, not only as a nation, but in how we communicate on the web and how we exercise, a kind of freedom of information. We don't want to become like other countries that censor communications, but it seems that under the Obama administration, there has been an unparalleled level, really, of secrecy and of over-classifying documents and punishing reporters and others who share information on the web.
What do you think of that about the Obama administration? Because as a candidate, he promised to reduce civil liberties violations committed in the name of national security. What do you think has changed?
Certainly, so many individuals were hopeful that this constitutional law professor would come in and undo what we saw as abuses such as the warrantless wiretapping program that we saw under George W. Bush, but also even going back decades, again, even under Carter and other presidents, Reagan especially, we've had, this race to have a tight grip on information and how Americans have access to it. I think that what it shows on one level is that when you get into that office of president, who had had such support among large corporations to get him elected, that even Obama becomes beholden to what is really a revolving door between high-level CEOs of multinational corporations and the very powerful intelligence agencies in the government. And I think it's worth noting that for example, 3- and 4-star generals have in a development that I think shows this revolving door. The ones who retired between 2004 and 2008 actually took jobs with defense contractors as consultants, according to the Boston Globe, and then in many cases continued to advise the Department of Defense on policy, which raises questions, of course, about bias and conflict of interest. And so I think that Obama is in a difficult position because probably intellectually he understands the constitutional ramifications of what's happening, and yet corporations are so entwined in how we do government that I just don't think it's possible to separate the two at this point.
We're speaking with Heidi Boghossian, and her book is entitled Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. On today's Topical Currents, if you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. You can also email radio at WLRN.org, or you can tweet us, and that's at Topical Currents.
Very good. Again, that number, 1-800-743-9576. Tell me, Heidi, what's caused our growing acceptance of surveillance? Has it been 9/11, or just that many people have the feeling that I've got nothing to hide, so I don't care what they're doing?
It's a combination of several factors. Certainly, the events of 9/11 caused alarm in Americans across the country. And when we have our elected officials saying we just want to keep you safe, and if you have nothing to hide, you shouldn't be worried, it becomes easy for some people to say, okay, you know, I've done nothing wrong, not realizing really that it's in times of national crisis that we need to uphold the Constitution. There is no exception to the Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable search and seizures. Even an attack on this country doesn't give our government the right to suspend those protections. And it becomes increasingly important. They say, for example, if you don't use your First Amendment rights, you risk losing them. You have to keep them in good shape. You have to keep speaking out. And we do see, after high-profile events, that members of the government really, and certain members of the public, almost sort of chastise individuals who dare to speak out and criticize government policies and say maybe, you know, our attitudes had something to do with how we're perceived by other countries. So I think that it was a combination of a vulnerable public, and I also think the convenience and the pervasiveness of these personal devices. I give the example in the book of Disney World, where children are given rubber band bracelets with RFID, radio frequency ID chips in them that contain their personal information, given, of course, by their families, allows them to skip long waiting lines. And in so many cases, whether it's apps that are developed or things that you can do on your iPhone or other, you know, personal device, smartphones, get you through a busy day very quickly. So you trade personal information for convenience and expediency. And I think that the more we're dependent on electronic communications, the more attractive that is, but it also just becomes habit. So one has to take a step back and say, remember what it was like when we used a landline and we met people in person to share private information, and we didn't bear all on Facebook or other social sites. That, I think, convenience and also the attractiveness of being able to reach out immediately to communicate. It shows that we're still a nation of in-person communities. It's just shifted really from the physical to the electronic.
But you don't think this can change, do you? I mean, we're so used to, maybe it's in part complacency. I mean, we're so used to looking at, if we look at shoes and then all of a sudden we're on another site and the shoes pop up. Maybe we're just so used to it that we've become complacent.
We're certainly used to it, and I do agree there's a high level of complacency. However, when people start to think of information they may have thought was held private and then realize the many different ways, not only that we've become used to, but that we're going to be facing in the next couple of years. One example is the use of domestic drones that the Federal Aviation Administration and drone lobbyists really pushed through, so that in 2005, Congress has required the FAA to devise rules to integrate drones into our American skies, and they will have the capacity in their various small forms. They're designing some the size of mosquitoes, they say, that can invade our personal space in ways that we might really have thought were futuristic, science fiction in nature. They can hover for long periods of time and monitor us, and will be used in large part for law enforcement purposes. I think that as people see things like this coming into their own neighborhood, hopefully they will say there needs to be a line drawn between what we're willing to give up for some convenience and what we're not willing. And I think really the key thing now is that everyone try to educate themselves about what information they're giving over. There's a new site that Axiom, one of the largest web developers, data aggregators in the country, just launched, where it lets you go online and see what information they have on you. And they very cleverly have allowed you to update that information so that, in fact, it gives some more accurate information. So just be aware when you hand in a product information form, for example, don't fill in the number of family members or personal information. They're keeping that on you.
Scary stuff. We're speaking with Heidi Boghossian. She's the executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, and her book is entitled Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. We do have calls, and we will come back and take them after this short break.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM. NPR for the Florida Keys. We're funded by listeners like you and by GEICO, offering a variety of insurance products, including auto, renters, and motorcycle. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO. Tonight at 9 p.m. on WLRN-TV Channel 17, watch Charlie Rose's global television exclusive with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. This is Assad's first interview with an American television outlet in nearly 2 years. Watch the interview in its entirety tonight at 9 p.m. on Channel 17.
Hi, I'm Greg Allen, NPR's correspondent based here in Miami. The best in news reporting and original journalism for South Florida is here on WLRN. Starting later this month, you can help WLRN get even better. Help the station cut back the number of pledge drives during the coming year from 3 down to just 2. It all starts with you. Find out more at WLRNradio.org.
Minutes past 1 o'clock. It's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we resume our conversation with Heidi Boghossian. We're talking about her book, Spying on Democracy. Heidi, we have a listener who wants to know the impact of Snowden, Manning, Hastings, Brown et al. In this, or traitors or patriots?
I believe these individuals are true patriots. They did not come forth with this information for individual benefit. They were, as they say, motivated by the fact that they saw things going very wrong with government actions that the public was unaware of. And we've got to take a look at the state of media in this country to really understand what this means. So many of our media outlets that used to bring investigative reporting to Americans are gone. If you go back to the days of COINTELPRO in the 60s and early 70s, for example, one of the targets was the free press, the alternative newspapers that cropped up in many cases to report on, you know, Vietnam War protests or the way the government was conducting business and wasn't reporting on it. And they've always played, in my mind, a very crucial role in serving as a watchdog for the government, as has the media at large. As a result of COINTELPRO, a lot of those newspapers shut down, most of them, in fact. And now what we have is a few large corporations owning most of the radio and TV stations and newspapers in this country. Investigative journalism has come to a standstill. So what happens is that we rely increasingly on brave individuals who pursue stories, the few investigative journalists that remain, as well as public radio and television stations that aren't beholden to corporations, to really get out the kinds of stories that give us a glimpse of what our government and corporations are doing. And I think Ed Snowden has brought forth perhaps the most important story, as Bradley Manning did, and as he's now going to pay severely for that. But they're heroes, and we have a right to have this information. It should not be hidden from us.
Do you think things have changed because of their revelations?
I think that we saw a few weeks ago with the so-called Amash Amendment, a very close vote in Congress over whether there should be some, you know, restrictions to the kind of mass data aggregating and gathering of metadata that we saw. I think that when Sensenbrenner, one of the architects of the USA Patriot Act, says it's time to revisit it, we thankfully have indication that perhaps our legislators are even realizing things have gone too far. Secrecy has gone too far.
Let's take a call or two. We're speaking with National Lawyers Guild Executive Director Heidi Boghossian. First up, we have listener Charlie. He's in Miami. Hey, Charlie.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I want to commend your guest for her labor and her work. This stuff scares the bejesus out of me. But the problem is, the masses have been conditioned to pay attention to the fun stuff, the iPhones, football season, basketball season, marketing, and the whole works, and we're all bamboozled we just don't see the reality until it hits us in the nose. Now, there's a question that I'd like to ask your guest. What is the difference between current fascism and corporatism? I think we're living in that age. And could she just give the website that she mentioned previously where they collect a bunch of data? And I'll take my answer offline. Thank you very much for your guest. I appreciate it. And WLRN. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling.
Should I answer that, or did he want it offline?
No. He was going to take his answer off the air.
Okay. I think that the website I referenced, if people just type in Axiom, A-C-X-I-O-M, that's the data aggregator. They might enjoy reading a bit about what they do. I don't have the exact name of the link, but I think you can find it on there. It's aboutthedata.com, aboutthedata.com, and you just type in your name, but you have to give your social security number to get access to your information.
Ooh, ooh, ooh,
that
ooh,
doesn't
ooh.
Sound like a good idea.
No, I mean, only if people are curious about what is on there. But I think the question about fascism, you know, it's easy, and I think critics of privacy proponents and sort of activists usually say, oh, conspiracy theorist, or you use the word fascism too much. And I think we have to be cautious about how we speak of these things. But certainly, the founders of this country and the colonists who fought against general warrants that the British government would use to go into people's homes to search, really knew that governments tend, when given the tools, to overreach and abuse authority, as we've discussed earlier. So I think that the problem is when corporations are, as they have been in this country, called by the Supreme Court to have the same rights as persons, we have a serious problem, because their bottom line, as people know, is to make money, and it has nothing to do with securing the public welfare. It, in fact, I think they're doing a disservice to their shareholders if they put public interest above the bottom line. That, to me, it does not comport with how a country should be run and how our Constitution provides that the people need to tell the government what to do, and we're not, you know, supposed to be guarded over by a very constrictive, harsh government that curtails our rights. That's why we have the Bill of Rights. So I think that, yes, we have been brainwashed in a way, as the listener said. We've been bombarded with commercial advertisements and in many respects made think that valuing a new purchase or something superficial is the measure of who we are as a personhood. And unfortunately, it's really the quality of interpersonal relationships and the ability to speak out and to have a country that looks after its people is really how we should judge how our government is performing.
You mentioned earlier Disney World and the use of the RFID bands, the radio frequency ID bands. But there are also some tremendous benefits of those bands. Library books, finding our pets, wild animal studies, use in schools, and people tracking cell phones might be able to find my kidnapped child.
No doubt. There are thousands of beneficial, wonderful uses for these technologies. I mean, drones can go over a forest fire or get into a difficult, dangerous situation to check out things where putting a person in an aircraft vehicle would be, potentially perilous. And I think we have to harness and focus on the positive uses. Of course, it becomes more difficult when the profit motive enters into it and when drone lobbyists see millions of dollars coming their way to deploy drones for other reasons. That's where we have to start really becoming aware and thinking as a nation. We have the power to say we accept them for certain law enforcement and other safety reasons, or to find a lost pet, for example. How many people have chips in their dogs? Many. Those are the good uses, but when it violates our constitutional rights and our very privacy, there should be protections put in place, not only for adults, but I also think very much for children who are surfing the web and who are not as sophisticated about when they may be handing over personal information.
Yeah, talk more about that, the drawbacks of these laws designed to protect children's online privacy.
It seems that given the speed with which technology changes literally on a day-by-day basis, that laws governing not only the protection of children, but many of us in other respects have just frankly not kept up to date with the development of technology. I mentioned the example of a school that installed spy cameras on laptop computers that were given to their students in the state of Pennsylvania. And one school official called a family in and said, you know, we saw your child do this. And the parents said, well, this was when he was at home. And it came out that they were spying on them. Hmm. And through a program that I think was intended to actually help expand, you know, students' horizons. But the Department of Education the Federal Trade Association, we simply don't have enough, the Federal Trade Commission, don't have enough protections on online privacy for children. Fortunately, there are groups like the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, and others who have been lobbying to make, for example, social games divulge online that they cannot get email or passwords from children under, I think it's 12 years of age or 13 years of age, without first obtaining parental consent. And, parents are becoming more aware of how information has been gathered, but I think that it needs to get more attention, and there are groups working on it, but it seems to be coming, any changes seem to be coming more from nonprofit advocacy organizations and from the government agencies that were tasked with protecting these areas.
Again, we're speaking with Heidi Boghossian. Her book is entitled Spying on Democracy. And we do have some calls we're going to get to, but we need to take this break, and we'll be right back.
This is 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys is 91.5 WKWM. We're also streaming online at WLRN.org. Quick check of weather, 87 degrees under mostly cloudy skies here in Miami. We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, Gable Stage, Temps ASAP, and the Conrad Miami Hotel. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. Comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery offered for older adults and baby boomers at Hanley Center, 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And indeed, the WLRN Topical Currents page will have all of the links for Heidi Bogosian and her book, Spying on Democracy. If you go there, you can link directly to it and learn more about her and her many books, actually.
And one thing I just want to add, your website, Heidi, is just nlg.org?
Correct. That's the website for the National Lawyers Guild, where I work.
And that also will take people to this book?
We'll put a link on it for that,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we're all linked up. Let's go to Richard in Miami. Hi.
Hello, good afternoon. I appreciate this call. My question or comment is reference to the Third Amendment. I think a lot of individuals don't realize that the Third Amendment protects them against search and seizure. But when they give up their personal information to, like Heidi was saying, to a website, they've basically given up that right of privacy. And whereas I think, and I could be, I'm not sure if I'm correct, but the government can go to that database and data mine information. Many times I think there are or have been in the past requests from Google on individuals' information. That's more of a comment, but it just makes people aware that they don't have to give information all because it's asked. They can use a nickname, an alias name. You don't have to give your birth date. And maybe a different email, so you can find out where this marketing is coming from a certain email you created. I think what Heidi is saying, there's pluses and there's minuses. You know, there's technologies bringing us forward in our world, in our culture, in our evolution of beings. And at the same time, there has to be a checkpoint about how much information is used to data mine you. I think there are search engines that's their business. It's not free. It's data mining and for marketing purposes.
Heidi?
I think it's certainly an excellent point that when you are asked to turn over information, and it could be as simple as information on a form in your doctor's office or when you purchase something, you do not have to give, with a few rare exceptions, your Social Security number. I never give mine out anymore. You know, certainly if it's the U.S. Department of Justice or you're getting a passport, that's different. But in most instances, that is not necessary. And all you have to do is leave that line blank. Similarly, what you can do is if you see something on a form, you can ask, why do you need this information? I don't feel comfortable giving it out. I think people have a tendency to just fill things in. It's almost like a obeisance to authority on forms, but the less information you give, the better. And yes, there are books out there on how to disappear, which are kind of fun reading just as people become more aware of this, but it is possible to create, you know, websites or separate email accounts or get Tor, the data package, that software that lets you encrypt your information. Some of it is takes a little time, but you don't want to make it easy to have the government and corporations accessing your data. I think awareness of when you give information away is the most important thing, that if you do so, you should be doing so willingly and not because it's just habit or something that we do.
And we'll move along to more callers. We're getting short on time, so please be brief. Miguel in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks, guys. Great show, and also thank you to the guests. I'll try to be as brief as possible. I wanted a guest opinion on the latest decision on the federal judge in New York regarding the NYPD stop and frisk practices. And one of the implementations that the judge recommended was the body cameras be worn by police officers to record interactions with the public. There's a group online, it's called CopBlock.org. They record the police, and they have been arrested many times. They have been tried, and that also happens a lot in South Florida, where police officers are very aggressive when they're being recorded. And there have been many times where guys have been arrested for just filming the police, and I wanted to know the guest opinion on it. Thank you. And I'll take my answer up here.
Okay, thank you, Heidi.
Well, in full disclosure, one of the attorneys on that case is a National Lawyers Guild member, Jonathan Moore. We were delighted with the judge's decision because, as she noted, backed up with a lot of data, most of the stop and frisks that have been made in New York by the NYPD targeted individuals who were African American or Latino, and I think it was just 2 or 3% had anything ever led to anything, either having a weapon on them. Most of them were people who were just walking around minding their business, and we feel strongly that this was a clear case of racial profiling, which is unlawful, and that there were quotas to be met, and that you really need officers to have probable cause, either that someone has a weapon or they're engaged in a criminal activity. Otherwise, it becomes like a police state, and it was just happening too much. Teenagers were becoming used to this as a part of their daily life. I think the idea of having cameras cannot hurt. Again, if officers are doing their work and not overreaching or abusing their authority, they should have nothing to hide. And if it helps us on a limited basis make sure that they comport with the law, it sounds like a fine idea to me.
We embed our pets with devices. How about human embedding? There could be a lot of uses. You wouldn't need any keys. You wouldn't need the passwords on the computer. Your medical emergency information would be right there. What's the drawback?
The drawback is that once you have a national ID system, which certainly having an RFID chip embedded in an individual would amount to the equivalent of, you risk what an earlier commenter said, I think, of having a totalitarian regime or even fascism. It puts too much control in the hands of a powerful few and makes it dangerous and could be virtually impossible to have any freedom or anonymity, which are rights that we enjoy in this country. So some individuals are implanting them themselves. Very few, for the reasons you mentioned, turn on their stereo, open the garage door. But it's just like someone warned years ago when we had Social Security cards initially, there's the chance they could be used as national identifier, and that's something that till recently we have objected to in this country.
Heidi, do you expect Congress to enact any meaningful reforms to the surveillance procedures we're seeing?
I think we're going to see a multi-step progression where more and more information comes out, and we will have debates, hopefully public hearings, and a lot of discussions, because I think the revelations we've seen are just the tip of the iceberg. So, yes, I am hopeful there will be more protections put in place, hopefully committees to investigate, and really get a handle on the scope of everything that's happening.
Tell us more about the National Lawyers Guild.
The National Lawyers Guild is a progressive bar association founded in 1937. A lot of the work we've done has been to protect individuals or organizations that the government has targeted for political beliefs. So during the McCarthy era, we represented persons targeted by the House Un-American activities. We work on behalf of political prisoners. We work for social and economic justice. We're a membership organization, so our members across the country may pursue lawsuits in our name. We do a lot of work defending protesters and occupiers, and we've helped shape some laws over the past seven decades.
And you work with the ACLU?
In many states, we do. We've brought litigation together with the ACLU, we work with other groups when there are issues that we share concern about, and we often take cases that a lot of other groups won't, because we really believe that the law should be used to protect human interests instead of property interests.
Well, we want to thank you. We've been speaking with Heidi Boghossian. She's the executive director of the National Lawyers Guild. That's NLG.org. Co-host of the Civil Liberties radio show, Law and Disorder, on WBAI in New York. The book is entitled Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for being with us. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. As always, you can find free audio archives and downloads of this and other programs at our website, WLRN.org. More information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is the story behind the phenomenal 40-year musical saga of the Bee Gees. We'll have music, of course, and rock historian and Bee Gee biographer David Meyer. And the calendar. On this day in 1941, 72 years ago, the birth of singer and composer Otis Redding in Dawson, Georgia. His appearance at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 built him into a legendary crossover artist. He died in a plane crash later that year. And on this day in 1976, 37 years ago, the death of Chinese Communist Party Chairman Mao Zedong. Once a librarian, he established the People's Republic in 1949 after battling Chiang Kai-shek. One more while we consider monkey business. On this day in 1987, 23 years ago, presidential hopeful Senator Gary Hart admits to marital cheating on TV's Nightline. You'll love this. Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton calls in the program to say Hart should resign. So we leave with a thought from Chairman Mao, who created the Great Leap Forward in the Cultural Revolution. Quote, passivity is fatal to us. Our goal is to make the enemy passive. It's Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned next for the Here and Now from NPR News.
This is 91.3.